Good morning. The June 28th, 2023 meeting of the Coastal Regional MPs O will now come to order. The core MPO is holding an in-person meeting with a virtual option for non-voting members and members of the public. For staff, board members, and members of the public who are participating, today's agenda is broken down into the following items: approval of the agenda, committee reports, action items to be presented by the staff, other business, status report on current projects, activities, information report, other public comments, notes by the chairman, adjournment. For each agenda item, action item, the staff will make a presentation. The board may then ask questions of the staff for clarification. During the public comment section, the floor will be open to the public to discuss matters on the agenda. For members of the public that are online, if you wish to comment on an item that the board agenda is considering, use the raise your hand feature on your screen. For person attending the meeting in person who desire to speak, staff will provide you with a speaker's card. At the appropriate time, I will recognize you and staff will direct you to the microphone. At the end of your allotted time, as determined by me, you will be notified that your time has expired and I will recognize the next speaker. The meeting will now come to order. And because we don't have a quorum right now, we're going to skip items 1, 2, and 3. And we're going to start with item 4, which is the status report. All right. And Wakota, if you will come.
Good morning.
Morning.
Before I start my status report, I would like to introduce two new staff members. One is Anna McCree. Anna is going to be managing the urban flooding model study, and she's also going to dedicate her time on the resiliency planning for the 2050 MTP. And then we have a new intern, Rizvika Dara. And Dara is helping us with the non-motorized transportation plan and then the check in the travel demand model links as of now. So now I will just go over the 2050 plan MTP update. So several things were ongoing. The first thing, we actually got the staff member, a new MPC staff member, Edward. He's not here, but Edward will be the interim director for the developmental services, but he's helping us developing the 2050 socioeconomic data in support of the 2050 MTP update. As of yesterday, he's still working with SAGES and IT on that project. So we still target to have the revised 2050 data submitted to GDOT by the end of the month. That's Friday. So if you cannot do it, probably it will be early July. And regarding travel demand model, I talked to you that Dara is checking the functional classifications and the number of lanes for the travel demand model network. And she actually sent me the GIS file. She's done with that. So I just need to review the GIS file before we send that to GDOT. So we are targeting to send that revised information to GDOT by the end of this month as well. The quorum PO planning boundary, we are trying to, when we have a quorum, we will try to have the concurrence from the MPO board about the proposed MPO boundary. And after that, we will start coordinating with GDOT to get the revenue projections for the next 25 years, in that boundary and in support of the financial plan development. And then there are several studies that are ongoing. Freight plan, our consultant Chris will do the presentation today. And so you will know what has been going on for the freight plan update and what has been recommended. And the US 80 corridor study is wrapping up and the consultant is developing alternatives analysis right now. So we're going to have the probably presentation in August as you will see what's happening with that study. And then CAD will also do a master transit plan update. And then transit development plan update in August. Their board, they had a presentation yesterday at the CAD board meeting. about that. So that will be incorporated into our 2050 plan as well. And Asia is still doing the non-motorized transportation plan, and she's going to give a presentation at that well. So, and then we're going to have a new staff member in July starting the congestion management process. So you will learn more about that one. And also, we had a staff meeting talk about the second round of public engagement for the 2050 MTP. So we want to go to the community to show them the information that we have collected, the input. Asia has already done several presentations to you about the survey results and the map survey results. And we are going to have a mini survey developed focusing on the non-motorized side of it. And so we will just go to do the second round and also present to the community. These are the input and we collected at the first round. And then also these are the recommendations from the ongoing plans. And then we will ask for their input on project prioritization. Besides that, the new focus area for the federal government is the resiliency planning and the linkage between transportation planning and the affordable housing or housing. So, Anna is going to be in charge of the resiliency planning side of it, and Asia is going to be in charge of the housing side. So we will update to you on that. And probably in August, we will also show you our plans, like how, what is the outreach? Do we need to like go to the city council or county commission to give you the presentation? Or we also talked about probably just, set up like a booth outside like Kroger or Footland or something to collect input. So we will give you more details on that in August. And the next one, on the agenda item is the freight plan update. So I will ask the Chris to do the presentation. The Cambridge Systematics has done pretty much all the analysis. Now we are ready to focus on the recommendations. Chris, are you there?
Yes, I am. Thanks, Wakoda. Am I able to
show the slide, or do you want to like share screen?
If I can share my screen, that would be great. Okay, I believe that everyone can see my screen now. Is that correct? Do you see the presentation, Wakoda?
Chris, it's not showing in presentation mode. We do see the screen, but it's not in presentation mode.
Okay, how about now?
Yes.
Okay, great. Thank you. So good morning, everyone. Thank you for allowing me a few moments to update everyone on the Regional Freight Transportation Plan update. As Wakoda said, my name is Chris Lindsay. I'm with Cambridge Systematics. On our team also is AECOM and Symbiosities. We've been working together to perform the Regional Freight Transportation Plan update. And just wanted to take some time this morning to share with the board all that we've been able to do so far, and to let everyone know our next steps as we move into the final stretch of completing the study. So the main topics that I want to discuss today, first off, just an overview of what are the key findings from the freight plan update, to let everyone know our efforts with stakeholder outreach, who we all spoke to and what we heard back from them. From there, we're going to move on to what we found with the needs assessment, what we recognize as some of the major freight needs of the region, as well as our draft recommendations for meeting those needs. And we'll wrap everything up with our next steps. On the screen as well, you'll see the goals and objectives that we organized everything around. So these are consistent with the MTP, the long-range plan. And we really tried our best to organize all the needs, all the recommendations, everything that we're trying to put forth on what those broader goals and objectives are for the region. So our key findings. The first area of a key finding is safety. You had multiple corridors with hotspots for truck crashes. Trucks, accounted for about 6.5% of all crashes in the region, and about just over 2% of truck crashes resulted in a serious injury or fatality. And you see some hot spots along a lot of the major corridors that you tend to see truck traffic, so State Route 21, Dean 4, State Route 307, as well as I-16, I-95. Another key finding related to freight-related congestion and reliability. Freight corridors experienced some of the most severe congestion and poor reliability throughout the region. You see some of that in the map on the right-hand side of the screen where we're looking at delay per mile. Corridors such as I-16, I-95, but also State Route 21 are some of those that kind of jump out to you. And so that's going to be one of our key areas for addressing needs. Another key finding relates to at-grade rail crossings. There are nearly 200 at-grade crossings throughout the region, and we found that crashes at crossings were concentrated at really just a handful of those. About 34 crossings experienced crashes over the past 10 years. So those are some of the areas that we want to focus on from both a performance perspective in terms of alleviating congestion, but also from a safety perspective. Another key finding, we were tasked with looking at equity and environmental impacts of freight on the region. And what we found were that you have certain communities throughout the region that could be determined to be overburdened by freight, meaning that they experience more intense truck congestion, they experience poor reliability. We found that about 90% of the region's at-grade crossings were concentrated in just a handful of communities. So those are some of the community impacts that we were looking at. And the last key finding is related to land use. Land use decisions are really one of the key drivers to a lot of the freight challenges that the region experiences. So we felt that it was important to have some recommendations centered on that. We looked at both existing as well as pending developments, new developments that are coming online. And what we found was that you have new freight activity centers that are emerging north of downtown Effingham County to the west along I-16, near where the Hyundai plant is being developed, and also to the south with the Rockingham Farms and in the Belfast Color Road area. All in all, that's going to add over 15,000 acres of industrial space to the region. So getting ahead of that development as much as possible is going to be important. So in addition to our key findings, we wanted to make sure that we reached out to stakeholders. This included the general public, as well as freight stakeholders, those being motor carriers, major shippers in the region, as well as counties and cities in the region as well, to understand how they experience the network. What are some of the challenges that they see? And so with that, our public outreach consisted of one-on-one interviews with stakeholders. We had online surveys that were open to the public, as well as public forums where people could come out and give us their opinion. And some of the key takeaways that we got from that outreach was, one, from an economic development perspective, it was stressed pretty strongly to us that preserving efficient access to the port is going to be crucial for the region's economic development. What separates Savannah from Charleston, from New York, from Los Angeles, Long Beach, is that you have good landside access to the port, as opposed to some of those other regions where you have even more severe congestion challenges than what Savannah experiences. So preserving the access is going to be really important. I spoke briefly earlier about some of the freight-oriented growth, some of those emerging freight activity centers. We made some recommendations surrounding those as well, since stakeholders let us know that you have a lot of development going on now, but more is in the pipeline. And other key findings included a need for better east-west connectivity. This includes that Effingham County area, since there's been a substantial warehouse development in Effingham County, as well as improve east-west connectivity for existing freight centers, such as the President Street Corridor. And those are some of the key items that we got from that stakeholder feedback. Also, when we ask stakeholders, what should we prioritize as far as freight in the region, what should we be focusing on? This slide here shows really what we got back from them. Number one was safety and security, reducing crashes, improving safety at great rail crossings, and just generally improving the safety of freight traffic throughout the region was considered the most important. And a close second to that was reducing congestion, improving reliability, reducing travel times on roadways with substantial truck volumes. And as we were developing our needs assessment and asking stakeholders what should we be focusing on, again, we tried our best to gather as much feedback as possible. This slide here is just showing some of the online engagement that we had for some of our hybrid public meetings. We did in-person plus virtual options similar to today's meeting. And we got a lot of good feedback on things that we should be focusing on. So environmental impacts, new connectivity throughout the region, as well as some of those things that you don't traditionally associate with a freight plan, such as workforce labor needs and improving access to some of these employment centers that freight represents. So we tried our best to include those in our recommendations as well. So moving on from our stakeholder feedback, I want to dive into essentially what we determined to be the overarching needs from a freight perspective, and also go into what are our draft recommendations. And we'll stress that these are drafts. We're gathering feedback. We just recently had an update with the Economic Development Advisory Committee. We invited the public to that meeting as well. We met with the Technical Coordinating Committee. So as we gather feedback from those groups and from the board as well, we will make adjustments and edits as necessary. So as far as the needs, the big, large categories, congestion and reliability, improving travel times, improving reliability, infrastructure conditions, trucks really beat up roadways, they damage pavements, sidewalks, signage, and other roadway assets. So having some solutions focused on that, we felt were important. Connectivity, that's really related to congestion. To some degree, much of the congestion challenges relate back to the lack of network redundancy, the lack of connectivity in some areas. So having some new connectors in strategic locations we feel are very important. Truck parking is another issue that we heard back from stakeholders. Some stakeholders did indicate that they have trucks parking in unauthorized locations. So that would be roadway shoulders, on and off ramps for highways, sometimes in the lots of adjacent businesses or commercial retailers such as a Walmart or Target. So having some solutions that give drivers safe options for pulling over and get their mandated rest was important. Related to that is safety, having solutions focused on corridors with high crash rates. And lastly, resiliency. That's why Coda pointed out this is becoming a much larger issue, both from the state and federal perspective. So we want to make sure that the region is consistent and is up to date with those priorities. So we also conducted a resiliency analysis for the freight network and included some recommendations for that as well. So after we determined needs, we moved on to actually developing recommendations. And this slide here really shows the framework that we followed. There have been numerous planning efforts throughout the region over the past 5 to 7 years, and we didn't want to reinvent the wheel. We didn't want this effort to be redundant or duplicative. So the first thing we did was go back through those recently completed studies, such as the Transportation Master Plan for Effingham County, the Coastal Empire Study that GDOT recently wrapped up, as well as transportation studies both for North and South Bryan County. And we collected those recommendations, and from there, we filtered and enhanced them. So we filtered them to focus on those that have an impact to the Great Network. And where possible, where appropriate, we sought to enhance them. If we felt that there was some addition that could be added or an alternative that could be explored, we put that into our recommendations as well. And lastly, we filled in the gaps. So where we did not see a project or recommendation, but there was a need on the network, we created a new recommendation, a new project for that area. And that was the process we followed. The table at the bottom of the screen that you see, these are the different types of recommendations, project, policy, and programming. Project recommendations are essentially capital investments, infrastructure improvements. Policies are guidelines or principles that we think that the region could follow to enhance freight mobility. This includes future studies, future planning efforts. And lastly, we make recommendations as far as programs, these being ongoing actions and initiatives that the region can engage in. So after we collected those recommendations, the next step was to prioritize them. This slide here shows generally the framework that we followed for prioritizing projects that came out of this recommendation process. They were scored according to seven different technical areas: safety, accessibility, state of good repair, system performance, environment, intergovernmental coordination, and project readiness. These are the same as the goal areas that we show at the beginning of the presentation to make sure that we're consistent with that. And also, I want to point out that the specific amount of points that we allotted to each of these categories, this was decided in coordination with the Freight Advisory Committee, as well as feedback that we got as part of those public forums. So the specific point totals that you see, that's where they came from, not just point totals that we decided on our own, but what we heard back from stakeholders. And so after we scored projects, that essentially determined the tier, tier one being those that are higher impact, tier three being those that are lower impact. We also put them on a time frame. Short-term projects are those that are essentially lower complexity, lower cost. Longer-term projects are those that are higher complexity, higher cost. And lastly, we group them into two separate groups, A and B. Group A projects being those that are within or intersect the NPO boundaries. Group B projects being those that are outside the NPO boundaries, but are still important from a regional perspective. The tier one projects, again, are those highest impact projects, but those tend to be costlier as well. So this slide summarizes those recommendations. We have eight different recommendations. These are really buckets of projects and policies and programs. And I'll go into detail a little bit more on what each of these represent in a second here. But we collected over 200 projects from those previous plans. We filtered them down to just about 100. And this shows the breakdown by recommendation category, being operations, capacity, equity, truck parking, and so on. So these specific buckets of recommendations, I'll give you a little bit more detail on what we mean by those. So advancing strategic capacity expansion, these are providing relief to existing and future bottlenecks, implement operational strategies to enhance freight mobility. These are strategies that don't expand the physical footprint of the network, but instead use operations to make improvements such as signal timing, signing and striping and things of that nature. The next category, supporting increased rail capacity. It was made pretty clear to us that having sufficient rail capacity is important for shippers that rely on it, and it's also important for having an alternative to trucking, to taking trucks off the road. So we wanted solutions for those as well. Implementing technology strategies. This is using technology and information to ease freight challenges, such as dynamic message signs, in-cab messaging to drivers, alerting motorists if a rail crossing is blocked. The next category, increasing safe access to truck parking. Again, truck drivers don't have many options with where they can take rest and they have to take rest periods per federal guidelines. So we wanted to have some safe options for them as well. Improving freight network resiliency, solutions to help the network withstand and recover from disruptions. Mitigating impacts on freight on communities, since there are many communities throughout the region that are overburdened by freight traffic. And lastly, integrating freight considerations into land use. Again, going to sort of the source of some of these challenges and adjusting land use such that you can limit some of these challenges on the front end. So briefly, to give some examples of what's included in each bucket, here at advancing strategic capacity expansions, you can see where those tier one, two, three, tier three projects are located on the network. Project recommendations for I-16, 95, State Route 21, and other key routes. We are looking at potential alternative alignments for Effingham Parkway, the southern portion where it comes into Chatham County. Recommendations for increasing network redundancy in some of those emerging freight clusters to the north, west, and south of the region, as well as some new east-west connectors to relieve pressure on I-16. Under the operational strategies bucket, projects scattered throughout the region, you can see that most of the key corridors are touched in some capacity. Included in this are east-west connectivity improvements that we're making for certain interchanges along Truman Parkway near where it comes into State Route 204. Looking at additional studies on US 17, we understand that Chatham County is in the process of kicking off or procuring rather a US 17 study for Chatham County. We're making recommendations for extending that south into Bryan County and even into Liberty County, since there's a lot of development in the Hinesville area that makes its way into Savannah as well. Supporting increased capacity for rail operations, these include things such as crossing safety improvements for those handful of crossings that are where all of the crashes are being concentrated, those 34 crossings out of 200 throughout the region. Also, making recommendations to improve rough rail crossings. That's a good opportunity to partner with the railroad to do some perhaps full depth reclamations of some of those crossings that are rough and tough for cars to travel over, as well as just generally supporting railroads and expanding capacity throughout the region to take some of that traffic off of the highways. For technology improvements, we're recommending freight signal priority along US 80. Some of the analysis of travel data indicated that that's a corridor that is getting increasingly used to access to get to and from the port. So we wanted a recommendation for that one. President Street, we understand that the county is in the process of doing a study to see some options for potentially separating that crossing. As a short-term solution, we're recommending using ITS solutions, so a dynamic message sign and messaging drivers to let them know when that crossing is blocked. A similar type of intelligent transportation system solution we're proposing on Lathrop Avenue. There is a low vertical clearance for the railroad there. Trucks sometimes get stuck under it and impact the community that borders that area. At that location, we're recommending the overheight warning system so trucks know not to travel that route. For increased access to safe truck parking, we're making recommendations on some truck parking demand studies, as well as taking that information and incorporating it into traffic impact assessments. The basic idea being that anytime you have a new development, you typically have a traffic impact assessment to determine the types of roadway improvements that need to be made to support that development. Similarly, we're recommending do the same thing for freight-oriented developments and have it such that developers have space for trucks to park over the short term for when they need to make a pickup or delivery. That way it keeps them off of the roadway shoulders, it keeps them off of the on and off ramps as well. For freight network resiliency, we're recommending some further analyses and studies of, as Wakota indicated, the NPO is really already in the process of this, but doing some further study on the specific assets that need to be, quote unquote, harder to withstand a disruption such as a hurricane or a flooding event, and having processes in place for managing the network when those disruptions actually occur, so that everyone knows the role that they should play, and that way you limit those impacts to the region. For the equity and environmental side, we're making a recommendation to partner with CAT to incorporate industrial hubs into the transit network. When it comes to equity, a lot of focus is on those negative impacts that freight has to the region, and we do make efforts to address those. But one thing that we didn't want to overlook is that freight also represents economic development for the region. And so we wanted to have recommendations for some of those impacted communities to share in the economic prosperity that comes along with it. So having better access to the jobs that come with some of those warehouses or manufacturing facilities or other logistics facilities. And our last key recommendation area is related to land use. Two of these I want to point out. The first one, conduct a regional freight efficient land use plan. Historically, land use planning throughout the region has been somewhat disjointed, broken up for each county doing its own land use plan, each community doing its own land use plan. But what we know is that freight doesn't recognize jurisdictional boundaries. It doesn't stop at the county line. So this recommendation is to have a more coordinated effort around land use planning, specifically for freight, that you can handle on the front end some of those challenges that emerge from it, because a development that occurs in Bryan County is going to impact Effingham, a development in Effingham is going to impact Chatham, and so on and so forth. So having an entire regional land use plan to aid in those, addressing those challenges. The second one of these recommendations that I want to point out and draw your attention to, encouraging and supporting community improvement districts that are focused on some of these freight clusters. I understand that the region is already considering some a community improvement district for the River Street area, whereas those landowners, those businesses can take a portion of their property taxes and reinvest it back into the infrastructure. We're basically breaking the same recommendation, but for some of these industrial areas. You see that a lot in other communities in Georgia, specifically throughout Metro Atlanta, where you have community improvement districts that are focused on some of these industrial hubs. And they do the same thing. They take a portion of their property taxes and they use it to fix damaged roadway signs, to repave streets, to do beautification projects as well, generally to make some of those improvements that you would be relying on the county or the city or the state otherwise to make. The business community can lead some of those, since oftentimes they can be a little bit more nimble, a little bit more quick than governments can be. And also it just puts the onus on some of those businesses to reinvest back into the system that they benefit from. So that's a summary of essentially the entire freight plan, everything that we've done today, the draft recommendations that we've put together. Our next steps are going to be incorporating.
All right, is Chris back?
Chris, are you back?
Do we have a number we can
dial? Is he back?
Do we have a number we can dial in?
Okay, he only has several slides left, but as you can see, actually you can see the handout. Those would be the draft tier one recommendations. So the total project list is more than 200. So this just shows you the tier one projects. And we are going to post this presentation online, and then probably the technical memo will be ready by the end of June as well. So we're going to post the technical memo, which has the detail of the project list. So we will send you a reminder after we get that posted to the website so that you will have, because these are just the draft recommendations. Actually, when we get the presentation to TCC and ADFAC, we already got some input, like airport, they already provide some input on the air cargo, which we haven't been considered in these recommendations. And then Chatham County got the awards for the 10, real grade crossings, which were not considered in this draft recommendations. We have already forwarded those information to the consultants. So they will revise this draft project list and then incorporate that information into the draft technical memo, which will be posted on the website. So you will see that.
I think one issue I have, and I want to make sure, and I know he said that they took into consideration all the development out there and with the ports expanding and with Hyundai and all of that. I just want to make sure they've got enough, I guess, bandwidth in there, because we really don't know what the impact of the truck traffic, on the corridor. So I want to make sure they kind of estimated, significant growth there, because I don't want us to go down one road and then we find out we haven't allowed for, adequate truck traffic along that corridor.
If I may, one of the things that we did discuss, which if Chris was on here, was looking at the land use, this integrate, freight, considering some of the land use planning and the fact that several jurisdictions need to update their land use plan. In addition to that, this did not take in consideration the possible expanded boundary. So that will be addressed as he moves forward with some of the recommendations that finally come through. We did talk about that when he was here earlier this week.
Yeah, because I think that whole corridor,
it's changed.
It's going to change. And I really, the going from 4 to 6 all the way up to State Route 67, I think is needed. I think we're kind of behind the times with that one.
And I think it need to go all the way up to 301. I don't think it need to stop at 67.
Yeah.
I think it needs to go on up to 301. See, so we need to talk to his. Anybody, let me do this before I open my mouth. Anybody else got any questions they want to ask on Wakota? And if Chris get back online so he can hear us. Anybody else? All right. Here's what I see. Okay. We're operating too much in a box. Here's what I mean by that. Now, I'm not condemning anything that anybody has done, but how much interaction did you all have doing this? How much interaction did you have with the ports, with CSX, with Norfolk Southern?
We did have
Rail Park.
As a part of the stakeholder outreach, we did have individual interviews
with them.
Yes. For example, I actually read from the Savannah Morning News. There's like a big project. $100 million project between Norfolk Southern and the, what was that, on the Savannah Morning News yesterday. There was like Colonial. Yeah. So I forwarded that report to Chris and he said, oh yeah, actually they mentioned it during the stakeholder interview. They actually mentioned this project. It just, we didn't expect this project to be implemented.
Okay.
already. So, so it's like they already identified the needs, but they already told us what they have in mind, but we just didn't expect like such a fast pace.
Yeah. And I want to make it very clear that all of the people that you mentioned, we basically talked with the consultant, and that's why they did stakeholder interviews. So folks have been part of this process. We have not been operating in a bubble where we have not reached out to them to know what is going on within their organization. So we have done that, and we will do the update. That's why we're doing this this preliminary presentation now.
But my question is, did they let you in on the agreement that they have between each other and between them and the county?
We probably
Chris is back online. Back home? He can better answer that question because he did the interviews. Okay. But one of the things, if there are agreements, it would be great if we had a copy of them so that we would know.
I think more than a copy. I think we all need to be in the same room.
Well, that would be excellent. Right, I've been pushing that, but we don't ever get invited sometimes to the party. But I agree with you, sir.
All right. And here's why I'm saying that. If Federal Transportation gives MPO monies to do things, come on back. We can talk to Chris. Chris can hear us talking too, right?
Chris, can you hear us?
Yes, I can. Okay. Yes, I'm back. Not sure what happened, but I can hear you all now.
Yeah, can you just speak to the microphone so that he can hear better?
There are three separate pots of monies that Federal Transportation has that's coming this way. Okay. The first two have already been announced. The third one gonna be announced tomorrow. Okay. Would that money coming and going to those entities that's a part of MPO and a part of the county? MPO has got to know how we're spending that money, or are we going to wind up spending money doing the same thing twice? If you give, I'll give you an example. From Federal Transportation, they've got this section of money that they call railroad elimination. That's strictly what the money is for, railroad elimination. All right. When the county and the senator's office and the feds from transportation got together, along with Norfolk Southern, CSX, and the port, we identified coming out of the ports where the rail crossing problems were, all right? We've been given monies to help come up with solutions to those, especially in those underprivileged areas where it's affecting the most. That's why we had the that's why we had the press conference in Woodsville, because that's one of the tier ones. That's one of the top. Okay. What I don't want us to do, and what I think is non-beneficial for this entire county, is that if your consultants, ports consultants, county consultants, all working on their thing, and we just pass you a report, and you don't have no active participation. All right. If you just send me a bunch of questions to answer and I answer the questions, right? Mm-hmm. And then when the plan come up, the plan's not wholesale, or it's not wholesome. I shouldn't say sale, wholesome, because it doesn't take into consideration how it's going to impact all of us. Okay. And so what I'm saying is, we've got to get all the consultants and all the players in the same room, so everybody's playing the same ball game. Can't have somebody playing soccer and somebody playing football, somebody else playing baseball. What I'm talking about is, how do we maximize those federal dollars, because they are limited, but we can maximize them if everybody's in the room understanding where we're going and how we're trying to get there. See, and when I say that, now we got to know, and I think we agreed, and they shook their heads. We talking to GDOT, and they're talking about expanding the 6 lanes from here to 67, right?
I-16,
yeah. On I-16, mm-hmm. as far as 67. But the freight is going beyond 67. So what you wind up doing is you widen down here, but then when you get over here, you come into a narrow, so you're going to call it create a bottleneck. So how do we go back and say this needs to be extended, right? So that we increase what we're doing here and it becomes more beneficial to members of the MPO, members of the of each one of the counties, Effingham County, Bryan County, Chatham County, Bullock County, because it's not going to get lighter.
The state is also developing the statewide freight plan.
Right.
And then they also completed, completed a coastal empire study.
Correct.
They are aware that we're dealing with, what they have is like bigger picture, the statewide picture. They might like do like 10,000 feet. So we are dealing with like last mile. So basically our plan is more detailed, regarding our area, but in terms of I-16 widening beyond 67, the state might already have that. We don't know, but we will just, make recommendations, say this is our plan and this is what we recommend, so that they can integrate it into the statewide plan.
Okay. All right.
And I was on the transit committee that the governor set up, for freight, and they got feedback and they especially wanted us on there because of all of the activity. So they know what's going on. We were able to share what we were doing as well. So we're collaborating and doing what we can do with GDOT and the other players, some even on the private side, just to make sure that everybody's on the same page. But we will also reach out again to the ports to see if they got any additional studies. But the airport, CAT, anybody that has a study have been very good at sharing that information with us and inviting us to participate. And we've been participating in those studies and talking with them about what's going on, because I don't want to end up with a document, any of our documents, where we're in a bubble, because we do have regional, coverage and impact. So, we will continue to do that with our partners, here as well as other partners that are not part of the MPO.
Yeah, I will also mention, because I did participate in the GPA interview. So we interviewed, I think it's, what was that? Whiteman? Yeah.
Yeah, that's correct. That's correct. And if I can add a point too, and I understand your concerns. I think that you make a great point that if you want to maximize federal dollars, you don't want to step on each other's toes, and you don't want to make kind of contradictory recommendations. So while Coda and Melanie really stressed to us at the beginning of this study the importance of taking account of all those other efforts that have been going on in the region. So one thing that we did try our best to do with our recommendations, we tried to link them as much as possible to recommendations that were made as part of some of those other efforts. So we did collect all the state's recommendations for the Coastal Empire Study. The recommendations that came from the Coastal Empire Study directly went into the state freight plan as well. So those two are consistent. And what we do in ours is that we identify where we're making a recommendation that is the same or similar to what another study has already made. And I think that from a funding perspective, when you can demonstrate that multiple counties and multiple studies have taken an independent look at something and they've all said the same thing, that it helps to make your case. And so we did. So in addition to Coastal Empire, we looked at the T-SPLOS that was recently.
Didn't have that much information either. So.
What I'm saying is, from what GDOT have their consultants working on as far as the legal road is concerned. The city has a no because you've got Brickyard sitting right there. And you don't want it to negatively impact Brickyard. Like so. The city has to be in a position where they don't understand what the police does.
That's
feedback coming from somewhere. That's what.
I'm sorry if that question was directed at me. The audio was a little bit not coming through on my end. I didn't quite catch all of the question.
Right.
So this is just the first time you see the draft recommendations. And we are still in the process of collecting input. So these would be the input that we would collect, and we will revise the final recommendations and probably have the final ones probably adopted by before October.
Okay, because I'm almost sure that Effingham and Brian want to know some of the stuff that some of us know that others don't know. Okay, and I'll let you know now as I talk today. If I'm allowed to give it out, I do. All right. But I go into meetings where they tell me this is executive session. You know, in executive session and anything, what's said in the room, stay in the room. Okay.
Yes.
So, but I'm almost sure that as we develop this and GDOT is in the mix of it, that Brian Effingham and Pullup gonna want to know as well. And I don't know that they don't know, but I know they weren't in the meeting that we were in.
Yeah, please forward us that information so that we can incorporate all that information into the final freight plan. Because like I said, this is still a draft, the first draft, preliminary draft. So you're going to see the final one probably in August or October. So
okay.
Just want to make sure.
All right. We'll make sure we do that.
Yeah.
All right.
Okay.
Anything else there?
No.
All right, then let me go back now. So since we do have a quorum in here now, all right.
Yeah, correct.
So let us go back and start from the very beginning. And the first part is approval of the agenda. I need a motion and a second.
I make a motion to accept the agenda.
Second.
Properly motion and second that we accept the agenda. Are you ready for the question? Please signify by calling your name and your vote. Down to my left.
Dr. Shabazz, yes.
Ted Hicks, GDOT, yes.
Les Fossil, Richmond Hill, yes.
Michael Kegler, Chatham County, yes.
Johnson City, Savannah, yes.
Palumbo, yes.
Beta Massimo, Cat, yes.
Callan and Effingham County, yes.
Jim Aiello, yes.
The chairman, yes. All right. Moving on from there, let's go ahead to committee reports, verbal. Do we have them? Because I know someone ran into a problem.
ACAT, Aisha will give the presentation on ACAT.
Come on.
Hello, Mr. Chairman. ACAT met this past Monday, but did not have a quorum, so was unable to vote on any of the action items.
Okay. We need it from anybody else?
Oh, CAC. CAC also met last week, and I believe did CAC have a quorum? CAC also did not have a quorum and was unable to vote on the action items.
Okay.
Good morning. TCC met on June 22nd.
There were several action items endorsed, such as the 2045 MTP amendment, the fiscal year 21 to 24 TIP amendments, and the reapportionment MPA boundary update. Thank you.
And ADFAC met this Monday on, and also served as a public forum. There was only one agenda item, basically, is the presentation that you have seen, but it's like a more detailed version of it. We got a lot of good discussions about that.
Anything from the executive director?
No, we've introduced some new staff, as we indicated. We are moving forward with the urban flooding model and hope to have a final report by October.
Okay. We go to action items. Approval of the April 26, 2023 core MPO board meeting minutes. Is there a motion?
Mr. Mayor. Excuse me. Mr. Chairman.
Yes.
I'd like to make a motion for approval of the April 26, 23 for MPO meeting.
Is there a second?
I got a second. Les Fussell.
Probably motion and second to cast your vote by stating your name and your preference. Starting here to my right.
Jim Aiello, yes.
Tim Callanan, yes.
Faye DeMassimo, yes.
Palumbo, yes.
Johnson, yes.
Pegler, yes.
Les Fussell, yes.
Ted Hicks, yes.
Dr. Shabazz, yes.
All right, the chairman, yes. All right, moving right along, Waco.
Okay, I'll give a presentation on this I-16 IMR update. Many of you may remember that the core MPO actually started the IMR update on the I-16 exit ramp removal. It started by the city, but we helped them to develop the IMR. But at that time, the Federal Highway Administration's take on it is that because core MPO is not implementing agency, so they refused to review the IMR, so the project got stalled. But now City of Atlanta wants to restart this process, and then they applied for our earmark funds, and they got the earmark funds. But before the earmark funds can be authorized, and so that we can use them, and this project, it has to be included in the transportation improvement program. But the TIP is a subset of the MTP, so that means the 2025 MTP needs to be updated as well. So this is what we're trying to help City of Savannah to move along this project. The difference this time is that GDOT decided that they want to take the lead in helping us to update this IMR, the interchange modification report for the I-16 exit ramp removal. So for one thing, GDOT is an implementation agency. So if there are some recommendations coming up that can be implementable, and they can just move forward with the next step, maybe right of way or maybe construction. So this time GDOT actually agreed to work with the city on this. So the MPO is doing our part. So we will amend the 2045 MTP and also amend the TIP so that the funds can be authorized. And then by that time, GDOT and the City of Savannah will reach some kind of agreement. So they have to sign an MOU. And then we get the funds and GDOT get reimbursed. So we already have the coordination meeting with GDOT. We're just waiting for the funds to be authorized so that we can start to move on. So, as you can see, City of Savannah actually provided information why we want to do this, because the I-16 exit ramp removal, it will reclaim some land, probably restore some original grid patterns and have some promote some economic development and create connections between downtown and the west side of Savannah. So this is the benefits for this project. As you may know that we actually, because this is a 2045 MTP amendment, we actually advertised for a 15-day public comment period, which ends today. As of now, I received one verbal comment against this project. The concern was because it might mess up the traffic. But I did talk to Jill Sharehouse over here, and then the purpose of the IMR is to find out what kind of traffic what will the future traffic will be. So it will be probably will be addressed during the IMR update. But I did receive a written comment yesterday, actually at the beginning and at the end of yesterday. So this is from the Historic Savannah Foundation. They support to wholeheartedly support amendments to the 2045 MTP and the TIP to include this I-16XD ramp removal IMR project. So basically, we're just adding the scoping phase into the MTP, because the concern for MTP amendment is you don't want to mess up with the fiscal constraint. But since these additional money, these earmarked money, and those would be additional than the projected revenues, so it wouldn't impact other projects. So we wouldn't have any problem with amending this phase into the 2045 MTP.
And I just got one comment, and it's, you know, not for or against, but, and that this would be more for city, Shear House, when we go down this path, you know, with all of the additional freight traffic that we're gonna have on 16, and knowing as I do how congested that intersection is coming down, you know, with the flyover, we really need to look at the traffic implications, because getting resident, because that's right now that's the main corridor into the city. And, you know, kind of looking at dumping that traffic down on Gwinnett when we got the arena traffic there, I think we really need to have, you know, take some time and look at the traffic patterns there, because I think we could be in for a world of trouble if we don't, you know, we don't really look at it and study it real well.
Let me, before Mr. Shearhouse, and we agree, but we also think that the current situation is actually quite dangerous. As you all know, that loop is a speedway. People are not very familiar with it, come flying around, and then all of a sudden they run from the terminus of I-16 into literally a street grid. And so I think, you know, for us, it creates an opportunity for us to really back it up, make it much more traditional. And it does things not only from a traffic standpoint, but also from a historical standpoint of the city. Creates open land and allows us to be able to plan now with the arena and then respecting the downtown grid. Ms. Shearhouse might want to add.
Oh yeah, thank you, Mayor and Mr. Kaler, for those comments. Joseph Shearhouse with the City of Savannah. Like Wakota mentioned, I agree with you. The implications of this change and how it would impact traffic flow throughout the downtown community is a huge concern. And that's exactly what the IMR does. The IMR is an interchange modification report. Part of that report is to analyze and show what that interchange modification would do and how it would impact not only the surrounding streets, but the overall traffic flow. Just as a reminder that there are 5 access points to the interstate within 2 miles of this location, which is extremely high for federal standards, which are usually 1 within that same location. So there's many, many areas to access the interstate within this region. And I agree with you, the increased truck traffic is something we need to pay extreme attention to and make sure that we can safely, adequately handle the increased traffic load.
I think my concern, being a resident, you know, like everybody else, I don't think access 16 is the issue. I think people coming in is going to be the issue. How do you get that traffic in? So that just, you know, I look at, you've got a list of, you know, how this will help us. I just want to make sure we're looking at how people dump, you know, coming from 16 into the city of Savannah, you know, make sure we look at and provide the, a safe way for folks to exit 16.
Yeah. Just to reassure you that if the interchange modification report comes back with negative impacts, I can guarantee you that the city of Savannah and Georgia Department of Transportation, along with Federal Highway Administration, will no longer support the project. It is important to mention that in 2015, we did an interchange modification report at this same location, which a lot has changed since that time period, which is why we're redoing the report. But at that time in 2015, it showed no negative impacts and actually queue time positive impacts for the travel times around the area. That being said, not only have we gone through tremendous change since 2015, we're going through a tremendous amount of change moving forward, which is, again, why we're investing in making sure this interchange modification report is properly updated.
Anything else? All right, Ricardo.
We did advertise for a public hearing for this amendment.
Okay. So now, can I have a motion to open a public hearing?
So moved.
Second.
Properly motion and second that we open a public hearing. Are you ready for the question? Please signify your votes. Excuse me, starting to my right.
Callanan, yes.
Faye DeMassimo, yes.
Palumbo, yes.
Johnson, yes.
Pegler, yes.
Hicks, yes.
Dr. Shabazz, yes.
Chairman, yes. Public hearing is now open. Is there anyone present in person who wants to speak on this issue? Do we have anybody on online? No one? No raised hands? Okay. No one in the audience? All right, let's have a motion to close the public hearing.
So moved.
Second.
Probably motion and second that we close the public hearing. You're ready for the question. Please signify by voting from my left this time.
Dr. Shabazz, yes.
Yes.
Les Fussell, yes.
Kegler, yes.
Johnson, yes.
Palumbo, yes.
Betty Massimo, yes.
Callanan, yes.
Ayello, yes.
The chairman, yes. All right. We can move on, Okoto.
Yeah, can we adopt the MTP amendment?
Oh, yeah. Okay, because, yeah.
Mr. Chairman, I move to adopt the MTP amendment for the 2045 MTP amendment.
Second.
Probably motion and second that the amendment be adopted. Are you ready for the question? Please signify your vote starting to my left.
Dr. Shabazz, yes.
Hicks, yes.
Les
Fussell, yes.
Kegler, yes.
Johnson, yes.
Palumbo, yes.
Faye DeMassimo, yes.
Callanan, yes.
Ayello, yes.
The chairman, yes.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. I will move on to the next one, which is the TIP amendment. Now that we adopted the MTP amendment, we can include this project into the current TIP, fiscal 2021 to 2024 TIP. This project will be in program in fiscal year 2024. So that means it's July 1st. So that GDOT can start to authorize the funds so that we can start the process. And I also have three other projects that I want to mention in the TIP, because what we did is, if you go to the appendix, one of those appendixes, check project status check. So it seems like all of the projects that we currently programmed in fiscal year 2023 have funds authorized, except two. One is the US 17 Back River Bridge, that one. The right way is programmed in fiscal year 2023, but it's not going to make it. So the right way is going to move to 2025 outside of the TIP. So basically, we are deleting this project phase from the current TIP. Another one is the ITS project from I-95 between Florida line and the South Carolina line. So basically in Georgia. So that one, we have construction program in 2023, is not going to make it. So the project is going to move to 2026. So basically we're deleting the project from the current TIP as well. And the last one is that one of the transit project is the water ferry boat construction. So what happened is that the transit programmed funds in fiscal year 2022, the funds have been authorized. But when CAT went out for bid in 2023, the cost increased by more than $7 million. So because our current TIP is still the guiding programming document, it won't be replaced or by the new TIP until probably in August or October. People still refer this document as the guiding document. So we want to make sure all the information included in this document is accurate. So if even if the transit funds is in fiscal year 2022, but we still want to make sure, because we have updated project pages listed on the MPO website. So when people refer to this project, they can say that the actual cost estimate, because now we have the bidding information. So those would be the four TIP amendments. We also advertised for a 15-day public comment period, which ends today. So we only received one written comments regarding the I-16 exit ramp removal in support. Otherwise, we didn't receive any written comments.
Okay. Did we get to, okay. We've got the information from yesterday to today about the ferry though.
Yes.
Okay, that's included. Okay, because yesterday she didn't have it. Okay. And make sure that when you get updates, that you update our code and those, because we need to keep their website up to date so people won't go back and get those numbers from 21 and try to put it in now. But I see now you updated in red. Okay, good. Anything else?
Yeah, we advertised for a public hearing for this one as well.
There's a need for a public hearing. May I have a motion to open the public hearing?
So motion.
Second.
Probably motion and second that we open the public hearing. Let's begin by voting to my right.
Aiello, yes.
Talonin, yes.
DeMassimo, yes.
Palumbo, yes.
Johnson, yes.
Kegler, yes.
Fussell, yes.
Hicks, yes.
Dr. Shabazz, yes.
All right. The chairman, yes. Public hearing is now open. Do we have any comments online? No raised hands. All right, anyone in the audience to speak on this issue? All right, seeing none, hearing none. May I have a motion to close?
So motion.
Second.
Probably motion and second that we close the public hearing. Ready for the question, please signify your vote to my left this time.
Dr. Shabazz, yes.
Hicks, yes.
Fussell, yes.
Kegler, yes.
Palumbo, yes.
DeMassimo, yes.
Callanan, yes.
Aiello, yes.
All right, the chairman, yes. Okay.
So we would just ask for an adoption then.
All right, may we have an adoption?
So moved.
Second.
Properly motion and second that we adopt. Are you ready for the question? Please signify by giving us your vote. Right.
Aiello, yes.
Callanan, yes.
DeMassimo, yes.
Palumbo, yes.
Johnson, yes.
Kegler, yes.
Fussell, yes.
Hicks, yes.
Dr. Shabazz, yes.
Chairman, yes. All right.
Okay.
Ready to move on?
Yeah. The next one, Asia will give the presentation on this one.
Okay.
Okay. So I'll be brief on its presentation. So the core MPO is in its reapportionment process, and part of that process is updating the boundary. So the focus of this agenda item is specifically on the proposed planning area boundary. So MPOs are required to have a defined metropolitan planning area boundary, and the boundary is updated according to the U.S. Census. And this boundary is based on the 2020 U.S. Census. It's also revised according to the Savannah urban area and also areas expected to be urbanized within the next 20 years. So the process of drafting the proposed planning boundary involved putting together a working group where we discussed where should the boundary lines lie. So we had several meetings starting in March all the way into June. We also met with Brian and Effingham County to get their opinion on it. And then we had a workshop on June 2nd that was both in person with the virtual option. With that being said, after all of that discussion and drawing the boundaries, this is the proposed core MPO MPA boundary. And I'll go into more detail in the next slides. So there is more northern expansion into Effingham County. The northern border of this proposed boundary is State Route 119. Portions of Guyton and Springfield are not within this boundary, and we discussed this with Effingham County, and they were okay with the boundary line being State Route 119. There was also more westward expansion in Bryan County. So within this proposed boundary, Pembroke would also be included, and then also the area of the new Hyundai plant. Additionally, more southern portions of Bryan County will be included. The only portions of Bryan County that will not be included is Fort Stewart. This is a comparison between our old boundary or our current boundary and the new proposed boundary. So we see major growth northward, and then we also see major growth westward. Are there any questions on this?
All right, anyone have a question for you? No, ma'am.
So we are asking for an approval of the proposed MPA boundary.
All right, let me have a motion.
So moved, Mr. Chairman.
Second.
Probably motion and second that the boundaries be approved. Ready for the question? You wanted to have a question?
Well, I know when you split the city like that, I don't guess that's going to be huge because it's not very populated up there. So I don't think it's going to be a huge issue. Yeah.
No.
Okay.
Of course, that was their desire, right?
That's correct. When we had the meeting, this was brought to their attention that it was trying to keep the boundaries well defined and sort of where in Effingham County was in agreement with that. There's probably going to be some more growth up in that area, I'm sure. But we'll let Effingham figure it out.
They'll come back later.
They'll come back.
Yeah, and I can say that we're actually adjusting our future land use map anyway. We're using 119 basically as kind of an urban growth boundary as well. So it fits.
Okay.
Well, I think everybody right now is revising their land use maps. I know Bryan County, Richmond Hill, Pembroke is doing that as well, and that's why this was very timely. So.
And let me ask you now, as soon as you all get your land map adjusted, and please make sure that the staff gets it so they'll know what they're doing too. All right. So the director knows. All right. Any other questions? Any underrated? Please cast your vote starting to my left.
Dr. Chavez, yes.
Hicks, yes.
Les Fussell, yes.
Kegler, yes.
Johnson, yes.
Palumbo, yes.
DeMassimo, yes.
Callanan, yes.
Aiello, yes.
Chairman, yes. All right. All right, let's move right along.
Hi, everyone. My name is Anna McQuarrie. I'm a new staff member here at the MPO. I'm going to be the fifth project manager on the urban flood model study. Excited to see it to fruition. So I started earlier this month and have met with the project lead, Dr. Matt Bilski, and the entire UGA team twice this month. And so right now, MPC MPO staff is reviewing the contracts with the UGA team to ensure a timely delivery of their expected products. Previously, this was an expected end in August. We can expect October at this point. The stormwater management model and hydrographs are expected to be delivered on time in July and then August for the hydrographs. Right now, after speaking with them, data availability and accuracy has been a challenge, and they've hired a few additional graduate and undergraduate students to help with this process. I received a draft of the SWIM in an area earlier this week from a UGA team member as well. I'll be following up this summer, and again, this is expected to be completed in October. Any questions?
Any questions? None. Thank you, ma'am.
Thank you.
You got trial by fire.
Okay, the next one, non-motorized, Asia is going to do the presentation on this one as well.
Okay. So the core MPO is hard at work at multiple plan updates, and that also includes our non-motorized transportation plan, and that deals with our pedestrian and bicycle transportation. So some of what we've been doing during this plan update is creating new chapters on important topics related to pedestrian and bike infrastructure. So these are just some of the titles of some of the new topics that we're introducing to this plan. I'm especially excited about exploring how infill development can be a tool for creating more walkable and bikeable towns, also the impact of urban heat on non-car travel, and then also introducing the concept of a strode and how strodes impact street safety. Additionally, we are trying to track the status updates of the projects listed in the current plan. So there are over 400 projects listed in the current non-motorized transportation plan, and most of them do not have a project ID. So it's hard to know if they were implemented or where they stand. So we're trying to figure out which projects have been implemented, which haven't, so we can update that section. We're also trying hard to document new trails, bike lanes, and sidewalks that may not be in our current plans. We're also exploring low-cost technology solutions that can be used to make safer streets. So not all infrastructure has to be expensive or really intensive to implement. There are some strategies such as traffic lights and signage that can also improve the safety of streets. So this is just an example of a traffic light that was put in a residential neighborhood where people were speeding. And so the traffic light only turns green when you slow down to the speed limit. And so we wanted to explore these because low-cost solutions for safer streets could be easier to implement. We also looked at the open-ended questions in the Metropolitan Transportation Plan survey, specifically the bike and pedestrian open-ended questions. And we wanted to see if there was a commonality in what people were saying. And so we found that safety was a huge concern for many people. So many respondents feel that the current infrastructure is unsafe for cyclists and pedestrians. Many respondents also wanted some type of physical barrier or more separation between cyclists and motorists. Respondents also noted that sidewalk coverage sometimes suddenly ends and that decreases safety. And many respondents wanted more policy and education of bike and pedestrian laws and safety practices so the community can be more knowledgeable. And this is just a word cloud of some of the other concepts that people were talking about. We also had a steering committee meeting on June 12th where we discussed this bike map. The steering committee was in agreement with this bike map except for just one segment. And they also highly recommended that for roadways where speed limits are over 35 miles per hour or there's a high volume of traffic, that there should be a barrier between cyclists and pedestrians and motorized traffic. There was also a lot of discussion about greenways or multi-use paths versus just having separated bike paths and pedestrian sidewalks. So some of the next steps in this process is using satellite images to observe gaps in sidewalk coverage. So again, this plan is covering multiple areas, including Chatham, portions of Bryan, and portions of Effingham. So that's a lot of area to see which places have sidewalks, which places don't have sidewalks. Where are the crosswalks? Are they adequate? So satellite imaging is really helpful in identifying some of those areas. We also will be examining the infrastructure characteristics of the most dangerous roadways for cyclists and pedestrians, and then also exploring the scoring criteria and methodology used by the Institute for Transportation and Development Policy. So the current plan already has a scoring criteria methodology, but we wanted to review it and see if it's still relevant today, currently. Additionally, I'm working really closely with Rithvika Kadara, who was introduced earlier, and she has really great quantitative and qualitative analysis skills. And so she's been helping a lot with examining our roadways on a more technical basis as well. So I'm really excited to introduce those new concepts. The expected adoption date for this plan is still summer of 2024. I think June 2024 is the official date. Are there any questions?
Any questions? Thank you, ma'am.
We don't have anybody online for Pooler, but like I mentioned, the Kim Lee Horn did send us this progress status report. So they are at the stage of draft alternative analysis. They already sent us a draft list for incorporation into the freight plan in coordination between the freight plan. So just want to let you know that's where they are. They will have a presentation probably to the MPO board in August.
Okay.
For the new TIP development, we did receive the proposed revenues or expected revenues and proposed project list in March. But since then, a lot of things happened, especially at the end of May and at the beginning of June, because of the debt ceiling crisis. We actually have some like CRESA funds, COVID relief funds lapsing. So in order to prevent that, we did some funding swap. So basically Chatham County, got still a 204 corridor study, President Street, Railroad Elimination Study, and the US 17 all got this CRESA funds, and those funds have been authorized. So within a bit, because the funding was lapsing on June the 2nd, on Friday. So we got the news on Wednesday, says we finished all the paperwork, we got funds authorized right away. And then also Chatham County also got some CRESA funds for the Green Island Trail project. Airports, I-95 at Aries Avenue, that's scoping. The funds have been authorized. And City of Savannah's Middle Ground Road, preliminary engineering phase have been authorized. And the funds have been authorized. And then the Truman Linear Park Trail construction funds, the earmark funds, and the CRESA funds were authorized. So that means because of the funding swap, some of the Y-230 funds and the Y-30 funds are released back to the pot for use by other projects. So at least $2.5 million have been released back to the pot. So we're expecting from GDOT an updated revenue projection on those, so that we can start to develop the financial plan, for the highway financial plan, for this new TIP. Another part that is missing is the transit section. I've been working with, the CAD's financial director, but some of the information that Stephanie sent me, I have some questions with. So we're trying to schedule a meeting with CAD to go over all that information. So right now we are still targeting to have the new TIP adopted in August, because the comment period, the 30-day comment period, will start on July the 19th. I already sent the first two chapters to FHW for review, but as soon as we get the information, and we will send them the updated chapters. But if we don't get the information in time, and we will just probably target for October adoption. So there might be a delay, but right now it's because of the change. A lot of things are going on right now.
Okay, Ms. Faye, can you all get with her so we can get that?
I know that Wakota and Ms. Cutter have been discussing setting up a time, so I think it's just a matter of them getting a time that works on both calendars to go over that.
Okay.
Okay, thank you.
She want to make sure we get it by, get it in, get to have it done by the 19th, right?
The 19th is when the official public review comment period, but we also, FHW and FTA also wanted some time to review the preliminary draft.
Why don't I do this? I'm promising on behalf of a staff member that I don't have all of their schedule in front of me, but we will target getting this done by Friday.
Okay.
But I just need to get with Ms. Cutter because I'm just not sure if we're scheduled.
All right. And try again today so you can get that.
Absolutely. She is in the office now.
Okay, great.
Yeah. I want to make sure we meet those deadlines.
Oh, excuse me. Just so you know, they generally like to have 2 to 3 weeks to do reviews. So the sooner we get it into them, the faster we'll get it back out and get it.
Well, that's why I'm asking Ms. Faye to get with Ms. Cutter so that they can get Wakota's ASAP. Okay. So they can meet that deadline.
I'm sending her message as we sit here, sir.
All right.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you so much for the presentation. I think that I picked up and wanted to congratulate you on your creative work in keeping those funds and those grant funds local. Which I often know get stuck in a holding pattern and it's difficult to roll them out. But did I hear right that there are more funds available, and are you seeking any other submissions for projects, because it could definitely help you spend it?
Well, right now we don't know the updated revenue, but what I can say is for the Truman Linear Park Trail project, we actually have about $6 million in the TIP for that project. But your consultant actually gave us a cost estimate of $3.89 million and probably won't be enough for that project. But GDOT can only authorize based on the cost estimate. So if we have additional revenues coming back to the pot, we might like figure out how, I mean, if you need additional money because the city of Savannah will do the bidding for the project. So we will see. So right now, for one thing, we don't have the updated revenue, but the second thing, if we have the updated revenue, we might think about helping the Trumanina Park Trail project first.
Roger that. I'm picking up what you're putting down. Thank you.
Yeah.
All right. Anyone else? All right.
Okay, that's it. And then the next thing that I do have is the MOUs and bylaws update. Now that we have the adopted Cornpio boundary, and we are going to work on the MOUs and the bylaws for the next steps. The MOUs, we probably will include the newly adopted areas like Rincon. Those municipalities will be included, and then Bryan County. So we will have their like roles and responsibilities and all that information. And then the second part is that we're going to update the fee structure to see how it stands, how much everybody will pay. So that will be presented to you probably in August. And then the bylaws, we are thinking about establishing a bike path committee because, as Asia mentioned, we have like more than 400 projects that we don't know their project status. So the purpose of the bike path committee is probably just to oversee, the non-motorized transportation plan update and implementation. And then we will set up scheduled individual meetings with the ACAT committee and with CC committee on how to reorganize because they both struggle with quorum. So you heard Asia talking about we didn't have a quorum this time again. So we want to restructure. We thought about having a probably combined committee called Transportation Equity Committee, something like that. So we're going to set up individual meetings probably in July and August. To talk about all of this information, and we will get back to you in August. If we need to schedule a special meeting to adopt all of these changes in September, we will also let you know in August.
In addition, if you find that you need to have another meeting, we did have a workshop to discuss the bylaws with a number of the elected officials that are current members. Then we can arrange that if that is something that is the wish of the board. Before we come back for the next meeting for you all to vote.
All right. Are we going to the information report now?
Okay, I can open. Is Katie online?
Hey, Wakota.
Can you see a report, Katie?
Yes, we're good.
Okay.
Okay, so just to highlight real quick, we've moved Savannah River Bridge off of the pre-construction to the active construction for reporting because it is design complete now, and Middle River Bridge has submitted the final bridge design and is now in review. Skip down to number 4. LET is scheduled for July, and there is a couple of changes. Concept was approved for 5 and 6, the twin projects. Bridge replacement over Back River and widening on State Route 404. The concept was approved in June, and it's now working toward PFPR. And number 9, the roundabout at Hodgeville, the concept has been approved, and it's working toward PFPR also. And for construction, if you skip to number 8, 521855, it was relit in April, awarded in May, and is now awaiting NTP.
Any questions for Katie?
Questions? No, ma'am.
Okay. That's right. I think Deanna will do the presentation for Chatham County.
Mm-hmm. Still morning, Tom.
Morning.
So, I don't really have a lot of updates for you all other than what's presented in front of you. I will say that the Quaco Road widening project has, the clearing contract has been approved, and so we're moving forward with that. And then the traffic signal on Johnny Mercer at Lyman Hall, that one has also received board approval, so we're getting the contract together and moving forward on that project as well. Are there any questions about any of the projects that are listed here?
Any? No, ma'am. Thank you, ma'am.
Thank you.
Do we have any, Jill, are you going to give the presentation on the City of Savannah projects?
Hi, Joseph Sharehouse with the City of Savannah. Not much to update this month regarding the City of Savannah projects. We have the Delesseps Side new widening, which we completed the dry utility relocations. And then on the City of Savannah's Project Duren, the environmental justice outreach process is still ongoing and has not been finalized. And we're happy that there's significant movement on the Truman Linear Park Trail, which we expect to receive the construction authorization any day now.
Questions? Thank you, sir.
I think, what is the next one?
Going to the airport?
Yeah, Jim.
Thank you, Ikota. Good morning, everyone. Quick update, security checkpoint expansions moving along. Rain has slowed us down a little. We're looking to try to get steel up in the next month. Also working on our roof. That will expand the checkpoint to 6 lanes. The other major project is the demo air cargo project. Phase one is complete, which was the apron. Phase 1A is the taxi lane that is currently in construction. That project is scheduled to be complete late 2023. That ends my report. Thank you.
Questions? Okay. Thank you. Kat.
Thank you, Chairman. The our report is in front of you. Not much has changed. There are a couple of things of note, though, that I would update. On the ferry purchase construction, that first project listed, we received photographs a week before last of the keel setting. And we are getting regular updates now. The construction is now actually underway. We expect to be at the halfway point around October, and we will be traveling to the shipyard in New York to do the actual selection of finishes and those kinds of things. So good progress on those. On the ferry boat maintenance facility and ferry dock, which was the grant that was one that was in danger of lapsing, we are – extremely excited to say that we got notification last Friday from FTA that that is now moving forward through the finalization process, where FTA has sent it on and it's in Department of Labor for review, which means our union has to sign off, even though it's not a union project per se, but they still have to sign off. And so we're coordinating with our local union leadership for prompt comment there. We expect to have both of those projects on the July board meeting for CAT for them to be let to construction. So we're very excited about that, have our bid packages ready to go. In addition, the master transit plan was reviewed in yesterday's board meeting with our board, the final recommendations, and we expect that to be before the board in July for adoption. And then we'll be back before the MPO also in August to present as well. And then lastly, the updates that we are offering you next meeting in August will begin to include updates on the SMART grant. We expect, we were notified this week, we expect to have a July 15th start date on the SMART grant. And we are well underway with both the Savannah State partnership with the internship as well as engineering technology coordination and with Savannah Tech with a training program that will build capacity in the community with for mechanics and operators and so forth on electric vehicles, electric charging infrastructure, and the routing technology that is a part of that project. So CAT is on the move. Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, I do want to mention something from the ACAT meeting. We did have the comments on some of the electric buses are too quiet. Some of the electric buses actually kill vision impaired people or blind people. So the ACAT chairman did suggest that we schedule some like test run with the vision impaired community in before we roll out.
what we're actually going to do, that the ACAT comment was relayed to me, and there are audible technology pieces that we can install on those vehicles so that they can be heard. It's not the engine sound, but you can still hear them.
Okay.
And so we're reaching out to vendors to make sure that that part of the ADA compliance, if you will, piece of that is, and we appreciate that comment coming to us through ACAT.
Okay, great. Thank you. do we have anybody from LATS? Okay. The LATS sent us the report. They only have like two major projects. One is I-95 widening. Another one is the US 17 widening. So you can see the status report over here attached.
Okay.
And then regarding the tip tracking, we actually updated all those projects that already have the funds authorized. So you can see the highlighted cells. Those would be the ones that I have mentioned to you that have funds authorized.
And I hope you plan on enlarging that so I can read what I'm so gonna.
Yeah, it's this file's kind of strange because it looks clear on my screen. But since Sally was tracking the project status and it looks very vague on her screen. So this felt kind of strange, but we will try.
We don't have any other public comments, do we? Right?
No.
Note the next, core MPO board meeting will be August 23rd, 2023 at 10 a.m. Well, let me say now, while we were in here, let me say this to all the members. I had the attorney look up the rules for us. All right. Voting members have to be here except for health reasons or for emergency reason. Okay. So please now, if you own the MPO board, you have to be here in person so that we have a quorum. All right. You can't vote virtually unless it says on here. As long as a quorum is present in person, a member may participate by teleconference if necessary due to health reasons with written opinion from a physician. All right. The other is that you can only do it twice annually due to absence from jurisdiction. You have to not be in the city. All right. You can't be in your office and then want to come telecom. All right. So those are the readings that we got this morning because of things that were said, but folks, you have to be here, and because the governor has not created an emergency, okay? If he declares a state of emergency, then that's a different thing that we can do, and we can do virtual. Other than that, you got to be here.
Yeah, we'll send that out.
Yes. Yeah. Give this.
We'll send it out to everybody again, all right. Just as a reminder.
Okay. All right. Nothing else.
Chairman, before we adjourn, I'd like to take a moment to introduce Nathan Clark, who's sitting here to my left. Nathan Clark is the assistant city manager of Richmond Hill, and he's my go-to person. So,
all right.
I just want to take a minute. He thought I was not going to be here today, so that's how okay. He was making sure that we were represented. So,
well, welcome. And we look forward, even if he's going to come, you can still come. All right. Anything else for adjournment? May I have a motion?
Motion to adjourn.
Second.
The motion is second. Are you ready for the question? Please signify by voting to my right.
Counted, yes.
DeMassimo, yes.
Palumbo, yes.
Yes.
Fussell, yes.
Hicks, yes.
All right. The chairman, yes. Have a good day.